It's good to be with you this evening. I hope that something I prepared to speak to you this evening will be beneficial to you in some way. It's been an interesting study to me, and I hope that it will be interesting for you as well. It's been about 4 years since the last installment in this series. There was a series that David Menson and Carson were doing together on the book of Psalms. And I asked Carson the other day, I said, hey, can I continue that? So here we are. It's been 4 years. I've considered it a few times, but hadn't gone far enough to actually start one. But we're going to be looking at Psalms chapter 17 this evening. Psalm chapter 17 is titled, A Prayer of David. That's the beginning line in most Bibles. It has that little header at the beginning of the chapter telling you what the chapter is and a little bit about it. And this is less than a lot of them that have a description for it. But this description is very fitting for the words that David pens in this psalm. Although no specifics are given for this psalm in the title or translator notes as far as time frame or what's going on with David when he writes this, the context clues and the way that he writes indicates a time frame of persecution, a time frame of being followed, a time frame of being chased. He speaks of several things that could indicate the time frame of when he has the interaction with Saul at the cave where he cuts off a portion of Saul's garment. There's some indication that it could be during that time frame, but the only real indication is the fact that he's being followed. He's being tracked down. He's being hunted by his adversaries, whether in a physical nature or more of a mental and spiritual nature during the time of his kingship, I can't say for certain. But it does seem to indicate a time of persecution, most likely from being pursued by Saul. Of course, like many of the Psalms, it follows similarities to other calls for help, other pleas from David for God to help him in his walk, to help him in his dealings with his adversaries, to help him to keep on the straight and narrow path, to keep following God no matter what. And that dedication is something that he speaks of in this psalm as well. I want to start by looking at verses 1 and 2 of Psalm 17. And keep a finger there because we will spend most of our time in Psalm 17. Psalm 17, verses 1 and 2 says, Hear the right, O Lord. Attend unto my cry. Give ear unto my prayer. That goeth not out of feigned lips. Let my sentence come forth from thy presence. Let thine eyes behold the things that are equal. The New King James says deceitful lips, not feigned lips. It's deceitful lips. He says, I'm not coming to you with a lying mouth. I'm not coming to you with a deceitful tongue. I'm coming to you saying, here is what's going on. Please help. Hear the righteous. Hear a just cause is how the New King James phrases that first phrase there. Hear a just cause. Hear the right, O Lord. Hear what's going on. Hear what is righteous in your sight. And give me the help as I cry out in prayer to you. He says, let my sentence come forth from thy presence. Let me be judged by you, Lord, not by those men around me, not by the men who would chase me down, not by the men who hate me, but let me be judged by you. And my first thought when I see that is, it must have taken a great deal of faith for David to say, God, you judge me. Judge me now. I'm righteous in your sight. Help me. He He makes a similar statement to Saul in 1 Samuel chapter 24. In 1 Samuel 24, verses 11 through 15, it says, "Moreover, my father, see, yes, see the corner of your robe in my hand." And this is the passage that I was speaking about earlier, that he was in a cave with Saul. Saul didn't know he was there, and he cut off a portion of his robe. He says, "For in that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you, know and see that there is neither evil nor rebellion in my hand, and I have not sinned against you. Yet you hunt my life to take it. Let the Lord judge between you and me, and let the Lord avenge me on you, but my hand shall not be against you. As the proverb of the ancient says, wickedness proceeds from the wicked, but my hand shall not be against you. After whom has the king of Israel come out? Whom do you pursue, a dead dog, a flea? Therefore, let the Lord be judge, and judge between you and me, and see and plead my case, and deliver me out of your hand." He makes a similar statement to the statement he makes in Psalm 17. He says, "Let the Lord judge between you and me." And this is part of why I think that it must have been in a similar time frame, because this is the only knowledge I have of a position where David is calling for the Lord to judge between him and someone else. The only other option is maybe in the case of Absalom, but I don't think that was really his line of thinking at that time. That's his line of thinking now. That's what he's saying as he's being chased by Saul. He says, "Saul, let the Lord judge between us. Let this all be done." He says, "You're chasing after a dead dog, a flea." That's how he saw himself at this time. He says, "I'm worthless to you. Why are you chasing after me?" As he stands with a portion of Saul's garment in his hand, he begs to end the strife and for Saul to allow the Lord to judge between them. And that's the feeling that we get from that first couple of verses in Psalm 17. Let's continue on in verses 3 through 5. He says, "Thou hast proved mine heart. Thou hast visited me in the night. Thou hast tried me and shalt find nothing. I am purposed that my mouth shall not transgress. Concerning the works of men, by the word of thy lips I have kept me from the paths of the destroyer. Hold up my goings in thy paths, that my footsteps slip not." In the New King James, it says, "You have tested my heart, you have visited me in the night, you have tried me and found nothing. I have kept away from the paths of the destroyer by the word of your lips." He says, "I've taken what you have." He has confidence in his own righteousness. He takes what God has given him. He takes what the Lord has told him, what God has given the people of Israel. And he says, "That's how I have lived. That's how I have continued. That's how I am working to follow you day by day." He speaks of God testing and proving his heart, his confidence and steadfastness in his works to avoid the evil that is constantly available. He had a chance to kill Saul. He had a chance to end the conflict. But he couldn't, because he said, "How can I kill the Lord's anointed? How can I harm the Lord's anointed?" He balances his statements of confidence with the confidence in the word of the Lord, keeping his path, and that it only being because of God that he is able to stick on this path, and then continues to request the Lord's help and not failing in his way forward. And this shows up in a bunch of the other Psalms. I want to read a few of those. In Psalm 39 and verse 1, well, I got the wrong spot in my lesson here, but we'll read Psalm 39 and verse 1. It has a similar concept. He says, "I will guard my ways lest I sin with my tongue. I will restrain my mouth with a muzzle while the wicked are before me." He says, "I'm not going to speak an evil word." And that's something he says in Psalm 17. He says, "I am purposed that my mouth shall not transgress." He's doing everything he can to not even speak evil. And how easy that is. How easy is it to make just a slip of the tongue, a small statement that is against the word of the Lord. A small thing that we say that does not match the Christian living that we should have. James 3, verses 1 through 5, it says, "My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths, that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships, although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot desires. Even so the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles." What an extremely difficult claim for David to make. And even more to be confident in. That he would keep his tongue. That he would keep his tongue from evil. That he had purposed with his mouth not to transgress, to not go against God's law. It says there in verse 2, "For we all stumble in many things." I've already stumbled over my words several times since I started. It's easy. We stumble over things we say constantly. I don't know about y'all, but I tend to go over conversations in my head after they happen, and Alyssa does even more than I do, but we've both found that it's fairly easy to convince yourself that you have either really offended somebody or just completely messed up everything you said. And sometimes that's true, and sometimes what you said didn't matter that much, but it was still a mistake. It was still something that we probably shouldn't have said. And it's easy to do that. It is so easy to do that. But David had confidence in his righteousness. He had confidence that he would not even say a word that he didn't intend. And he even lives up to that in his actions. In 1 Samuel chapter 26, verses 9 through 12, this is a different point where David had Saul's life basically in the palm of his hand, where he could have killed him. He says in verse 4 of Psalm 17 that, "By the word of your lips I have kept away from the paths of the destroyer, from the path of destruction." In 1 Samuel chapter 26, verses 9 through 12, it says, "But David said to Abishai, 'Do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?' David said, 'Furthermore, as the Lord lives, the Lord shall strike him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall go out to battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. But please take now the spear and the jug of water that are by his head and let us go.' So David took the spear and the jug of water by Saul's head, and they got away, and no man saw or knew it or awoke, for they were all asleep because a deep sleep from the Lord had fallen on them." And if I remember correctly, he then goes on to stand on a hill above the camp and to berate those who should have been guarding their king. He had a chance. He could have killed him, and that no one would have known. It was basically war between Saul and David for that entire time. But David didn't strike back. I think it interesting, his statements in verse 10. He says, "As the Lord lives, the Lord shall strike him, or his day shall come to die, or he'll go out to battle and perish." Every way that Saul could have died, basically, he says, hey, he's going to die that way. He's not going to die by my hand. Either the Lord will finish him off, or he'll die in a natural way, or somebody will kill him in battle. He said, but I'm not going to do it. He had confidence in his righteousness because he was doing what he could to follow the path that God had set. He listened to the word of God and he tried to live by it. Romans 12, verses 18 through 19 says, "If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord." He kept from that path of destruction. He kept from turning to avenge himself And he said, when the Lord decides it's time, it'll be time. But I'm not going to do it. I leave that in the Lord's hands. Continuing on in verses 6 through 9, he requests that salvation from the wicked. Psalm 17, verses 6 through 9, it says, I have called upon you, for you will hear me. O God, incline your ear to me and hear my speech. Show your marvelous loving kindness by your right hand. O you who save those who trust in you, from those who rise up against them. Keep me as the apple of your eye, hide me under the shadow of your wings. From the wicked who oppress me, from my deadly enemies who surround me. I want to look at a few verses in a few other psalms that he basically says these same concepts. He says in Psalm 55 and verse 16, as for me, I will call upon the Lord, and the Lord shall save me. Psalm 66, verses 19 through 20 says, but certainly God has heard me. He has attended to the voice of my prayer. Blessed be God, who has not turned away my prayer, nor his mercy from me. And then in Psalm 116 and verse 2, it says, because he has inclined his ear to me, therefore I will call upon him as long as I live. He had confidence in God, that God would hear his prayer, that God would hear his call for help and would aid him. I have called upon you, for you will hear me, O God. It's hard to do that. Now, David had a little bit more physical examples of God being present. He had a little bit more to hold on to that in the ways of the prophets and some other things that had happened throughout his life to see that God was there and working with him. But the same principle is there today. When we go to God in prayer, as he is in this passage, we need to be confident that he will hear us, that he will hear and listen to us, and that we can trust in him to get through this life. In verse 8, he says, keep me as the apple of your eye. And that was an interesting phrase to me, because the only other example that I could think of off the top of my head was Proverbs 7, verses 1 through 3. It says, my son, keep my words and treasure my commands with you. Keep my commands and live. And my law is the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers, write them on the tablet of your heart. The phrase that David uses here, that God keep him as the apple of his eye, is interesting considering how that phrase is used in other scripture. It is for us to keep it as an important part of our life, to keep the word as an important part and an ever-present part of our mind, so that we will never forget it. And David is asking God, do not forget me. Keep me always in your mind. Take care of me. And he continues to ask him to be in the shadow of his wing. And that's the phrase that Christ used when he spoke of the children of Israel. In Luke 13 and verse 34, it says, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, but you were not willing. David was willing. He requested it. He requested to be sheltered by God's wing. He was certain that the Lord would take care of him. He was certain that the Lord would keep the promises that he had made to him. Verses 10 through 12, it says, they have closed up their fat hearts. With their mouths they speak proudly. They have now surrounded us in our steps. They have set their eyes, crouching down to the earth as a lion is eager to tear his prey, and like a young lion lurking in secret places. This is an interesting way to describe what is going on, as he speaks of those who would chase him and tear him and his, his band of followers apart. Because then in 1 Samuel 24 and verse 2, this is right before we read where he had cut off the border of Saul's cloak or robe. It says in 1 Samuel 24 and verse 2, it says, "Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and went to seek David and his men on the rocks of the wild goats." This was where David and his men were climbing, hiding in caves. And he says, "Those who would chase me are like lions coming after me." As he climbs through the mountains like a goat, he says, "The lions are after me." This is the description of his enemy that he sees in his mind, of those who would chase after him. Very satisfied with themselves and ready to destroy him. But he continues in verses 13 through 15 with extreme confidence in salvation from the Lord. It says, "Arise, O Lord, confront him. Cast him down, deliver my life from the wicked with your sword. With your hand from men, O Lord, from men of the world who have their portion in this life and whose belly you fill with your hidden treasure. They are satisfied with children and leave the rest of their possession for their babes. As for me, I will see your face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake in your likeness." He says, "Deliver me from the wicked. Help me to get away from these men." He says, they're satisfied with their families and their possessions, and they're going to leave their possessions to their children. And he says, I'm satisfied to see your face in righteousness, to receive that home that he only knew of in faith. You know, this is the kind of thing that we have through the New Testament with regards to how we are to pray. This is the prayer in Psalm 17 is a very strong prayer from David. In Matthew 6 and verse 5, it says, "When you pray, you should not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward." David knew that those who were chasing him down had a reward that they were going for. You know, if you remember back to how all this trouble started with Saul, the trouble started when Saul became jealous of David because David was willing to kill a giant that Saul was not able to kill. And the people of Israel came out proclaiming that David had killed his 10,000s and Saul his thousands. It got to Saul's pride. It got to his pride, and David's humility didn't help his pride any. And that was who was chasing David down. Someone who had his confidence in the world and had his confidence in his own abilities. In Luke 16 and verse 25, this is the story of the rich man and Lazarus. It says, "But Abraham said, 'Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted and you are tormented.'" This is basically what David was asking and hoping for. He says, I'm ready to go to heaven. I'm ready to see you. I'm ready to see your face and be done with this. And if that's where I can end up, all of this persecution, all of this that I've gone through, doesn't matter. I'm glad to have that. This is a beautiful prayer, a beautiful reminder of how confident we can be in the Lord our God. You know, there's a lot of things that go on in the world around us that can trouble us, that can get us down. But even while being chased by the king of Israel, this is how David felt. He gave his trust to the Lord, and he focused on that beyond anything that was happening in the world around him. I think we can take that as a lesson to go forward into our lives, to handle anything that may come at us, because we know that we can have confidence in the one who can give us a home when this life is over that is beyond anything that this world could even imagine. This evening, I hope that what I have spoken to you has been beneficial to you in some way. And I hope this psalm has helped you to face the trials of this life. This evening, if you're struggling with your walk with Christ, if you're struggling with your service to Him, prayer is always a good avenue to go to God, to ask Him for help, and to receive that comfort that comes through that. And we stand ready to do that with any who are Christians who need the prayers of the church. And if you're not a Christian, that there is no place like the church and like the body of Christ to have hope of a home when this life is over. There is nothing else in this world that can give you a chance. And this evening, I pray that if you have not obeyed the gospel of Christ and become a child of His, that you change that this evening. If you would, if one of the class, would you come forward, have a seat on the front pew as we stand and sing the song that's been selected.